Well, hey, hey, everyone. Welcome to Just Think, the podcast. This is Holly.
And Amy.
And Kristen.
And we are joined by a very special guest today. Sarah McGinnis is with us. Some of you may know her for her Instagram account, Biomedical Healing for Kids. And we wanted to have Greer on today because she is going to help us have a conversation around really, and this is for every parent, grandparent, or someone who wants to someday be a parent, but around what's going on to adversely affect our children's health. And what can we do, number one, maybe to prevent some of those things from happening in the future, but number two, to help treat and aid children who've been affected by a variety of things. Okay, if you know us on Just Think, you know we have covered a variety of topics since 2021. We've talked about a lot of the environmental causes of sickness and disease. We've interviewed people from the Monsanto cases. We've interviewed Dr. Paul Thomas on the childhood vaccine schedule. We have interviewed people on food. We have kind of run the gamut, right, of different conversations around what are the toxins in our world today, or what are things that are happening in our world today that are contributing to the declining health of America, and in particular for our children. And so we found Greer because she had a personal testimony, a personal story, and that led her to become an advocate and someone who could help others help their own children who were struggling with a variety of conditions. And so Greer, we thank you, first of all, for giving us your voice and sharing your platform with the world so that you can reach the parents who are looking for someone like you. But why don't you share with us your story?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. So I became an RD back early in the early 2000s, and I always liked helping people. I didn't really want to be a doctor. I didn't really want to. There was just certain things that I just didn't want. And I found being a dietitian, you know, very intriguing. I could do a lot of the things. I never really wanted to prescribe medication or anything like that. So this was like amazing for me. I could use, you know, food and supplements to help people overcome so many different things. And I wound up working in healthcare for over 15 years. And for me, I think part of it was when I got into healthcare, I was slapped in the face of just, this was not a way of helping people. It was more of a way of keeping people in the system and just keeping them maintenance. You know, it wasn't, you know, we would get consults for things to help people. We would educate them there. And there was a lot of people who just didn't want to listen to us and, you know, do what they wanted to do anyways. And, but, you know, to try to educate people, it was almost like we were working against, you know, the doctors when we would say, hey, we would like to trial this with this patient. They'd be like, no, they just need this medication. It's like, well, maybe not, you know? So after about 15 years of working in healthcare, you know, and COVID was coming and hit us. And I said to my husband, I said, I need to get out. I said, I can't do this anymore. COVID nearly broke me in healthcare. I can honestly say that. I saw so much stuff that I really wish I did not have to see during that time. And it came, I think, at a perfect moment for me where I transitioned right into more functional medicine, working for functional lab companies. And that was where I just loved it and thrived. I really enjoyed diving into research, diving into alternative labs, because I'm sure we've all been there. You know, even with my kid who's on the spectrum, my son regressed when he was about, you know, 18, 19 months. He was a perfectly happy, normally developing child. And it was that like a light switch went off and all of a sudden he lost everything. So, you know, I would bring him to the doctors, I would run labs, and, you know, they always came back, you know, quote unquote, perfect. And I've been like, I don't understand how this could be perfect because the kid hasn't pooped in a week. He eats five things. He doesn't sleep. He screams from morning to night. And I'm sitting there with my notepad talking to the doctors and trying to going, what has happened to my child and why can't anyone give me any sort of information or answers? And I always just kept getting, well, this is just how autism presents itself now. And this is just all related to autism. And I'm just like looking at them like, I remember learning and studying and in my clinicals, learning about autism. And this was not what we were taught. This was not how we, you know, I said, I'm just really confused. And, you know, I'm going to these specialists. And for me as a medical professional too, I always wanted to be the best. I always wanted to be the top. That, you know, I wanted to know everything. And if I didn't know something and someone brought it to my attention, well, guess what? I'm going to go back and I'm going to look it up and like figure it out. Because that was my job. I'm a medical professional. If I'm supposed to know majority of everything in my respected field. So if I'm going to these medical professionals and saying, I don't understand this, what is going on? Why is this happening? And you can't answer me. I am even now more concerned that nobody knows anything. And you are just literally, again, medical healthcare, like, okay, good luck. Here's your script for, you know, therapies. We'll see you back in 6 to 9 months. And I'm like, it took 6 months to get this appointment. And all you did was say, okay, your son has level 2 autism. Good luck. You know, and it was very frustrating for me being in the medical field. And, you know, I had a lot of people on the outside going, well, listen, you need to take yourself out of the equation. You're a mom, so you can't be objective. You need to just put your faith in everything into these medical professionals, into the therapists and stuff. And I was like, okay. And I had, you know, I was a first time mom. You know, I thought I knew a lot. And I got a big crash course into a lot of different things. And luckily, I did have a really good support system. So when I transitioned into more of a clinical role in functional medicine and opened up my eyes to all the different testing, you know, and we had done testing with functional providers previously and got key and better, you know, more into the biomedical. And then I just took off with it. And I would come home from reading research all day and I would sit at the dinner table and I'd tell my husband about all the research that I, and I'm like, and for a good like 2-3 months, he like engaged. And then after a while he goes, I can't talk to you about this anymore. He's like, you need to go just like give this out to the world or do something. He's like, I get, you know, he's not a medical person. So for me, it was just like, I'm excited and I had no one else to talk to about this stuff. And he was just like, I think this is great, but you need to go figure out something else. So I started a Facebook group and I just kept posting things and people were, you know, I was posting Keegan, I was posting what we were doing, what was helping, what, you know, and people would reach out and be like, I need to work with you. Like, you obviously have figured things out. And I was like, well, kind of, you know, I figured it out for my kid. Now, how do I apply this to other kids? So as I kept going down the rabbit hole of information and research, I realized I worked backwards. I actually went back to get my master's degree in health science with a focus on epidemiology so I could really understand research and understand, you know, I wanted to publish research, which I have. And I started working backwards with these kids. If this, the end result is autism, ADHD, eczema, you know, et cetera. How did we get here? And I started working backwards. And that's just how my brain worked. And having a nutrition background and a health background, anatomy, physiology, all that stuff, I was able to work backwards to find starting points to then be able to move forward to then correct the end result. And that's how Biomedical Healing for Kids was started. It was basically from our own experience and my ambition of just figuring out that the medical system is not meant to actually help. And it was very upsetting to me as someone who went into the medical field thinking I was going to make a difference and help all these people. And that's what I was going to, you know, do these amazing things and change people's lives in the medical system. And basically all I kept, you know, I didn't get that far until
well,
I started.
I think that's like step one, right? You literally just nailed it. Step one of this process of getting healthy, well, and healing yourself or your family. Step one is recognize the current medical system is not designed to keep you well.
Mm-mm.
Right? And when your eyes open to that, then you can take the next step because we know there's cognitive dissonance, right? Greer, and I think it's even harder for those of you in the medical community to maybe accept that all of the money you spent to get your educations, all the time and hours and hard work and excellence you put into building this career, to think that the foundations of that were not firm, solid, or even beneficial to us as a whole, right? It's not to trash the whole thing. It is to say the purpose of it is it's seems to be captured by pharma in a way, because it's like you just said, here's your script, instead of what caused this? And then what does the body need to do what it was designed to do, which is heal itself, right? So step one is, everybody, when you recognize, and I think the vast majority of us have had an experience now where we go, oh, my doctor doesn't know it all. My doctor said is not the quote I need to use anymore, because it does not mean that's gospel truth necessarily. When you open your eyes to that, that is step one. And I think step two is understand what Greer did. She just got educated. And let me just say, yes, she's a smarty pants. Clearly, she has the education. And she pursued that. And we need people like her who get it and understand it and can translate that into regular terms for the rest of us. We need her to do that. But you can do it too, right? You can go and read and start learning some of this yourself, because when that's what Kristen, Amy, and I have done. We just read things. We start to try to understand what does the body inherently need? How do we get it to it in a safe way, right? Then that's like kind of moving towards, how do I keep myself and my family well? And so, Greer, I appreciate you just pointing that part out. Okay. Your eyes are blown wide open. You're helping your kid. Will you share with us a little bit about what changes, maybe like what you started doing with your child, and then what changes you started to make?
Yeah. So Keegan, when Keegan regressed, I mean, Keegan was really good at, like, he would eat what we give him and stuff. And again, you know, indoctrinated of, you know, thing, I thought goldfish was perfectly healthy and a great snack. And, you know, when he regressed and we started having more gut issues and stuff, his restrictive of feeding became so severe. He has ARFID, which is avoidant restrictive feeding intake disorder. I didn't start the biomedical journey with him till he was about 4-ish. And that was just because, again, I had taken myself out of the equation. I was doing all the therapies because that's what everyone kept saying was going to, he was going to be fine. Just do all the therapies. And when it was, I had his baby brother, his baby brother had a mouth tie, and I was having a lot of issues with breastfeeding, and I had a lactation consultant come, and she was like, wow, your kid has buccal ties, lip tie, tongue tie. She's like, you know, this is related to genetics and MTHFR. And that set me down like a whole other rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like a real light bulb that went off. It was like, ding, ding, ding. I think you started to understand things. So as I found a medical provider, because I couldn't run labs at the time, I didn't know what I could and couldn't do. And so I found a medical provider who helped me run a ton of labs to understand exactly what was going on with Keegan. And he was deficient in a lot of nutrients, which I was like, oh my gosh, like, yes, finally, like something was coming back abnormal. And for a parent, we never want things to come back abnormal in a lab test. But for me, it was like, I'm not crazy. I knew something was wrong with my kid. Everyone kept doing cookie cutter labs and everything came back fine. And once we did the labs outside the box, it was like, ooh, finally. So I really started working on his microbiome, because he had, you know, yeast overgrowth because of rounds of antibiotics. He had, you know, horrible constipation and stuff. So I started working on his microbiome first. That was like one of the first things, because I couldn't work on his diet. He was in feeding therapy and stuff. We weren't getting far. And that was when we were just understanding more about ARFID. So I said, listen, if I have to keep this kid on supplements to survive right now and to rebalance his system, I'm going to do it until I could work on his diet, and which I was totally fine with. So we started working on his microbiome, probiotics, rebalancing the gut, you know, removing the things that shouldn't have been there, and detoxing, getting rid of heavy metals, mold, environmental toxins. And it was about 6 weeks into doing this. The medical provider wasn't a pediatric. He was just like an adult, but he was nice enough to help me. And I just kind of figured out the rest. And it was about 6 weeks after we started. And I remember I was coming out of the shower and Keegan was sitting on like one of those little chairs in the living room, and he had a dry erase board. He was about 4 and a half, and he was writing his ABCs for the first time. I like ran and got my phone and I was recording it, because for a mom whose kid couldn't speak, couldn't write his name, wouldn't call you mom or dad, to watch him writing his ABCs for the first time, it was like, and my husband's looking at me like, what did you do? And I said, I don't know. I don't know what I did, but I barely opened Pandora's box. And it was amazing to see him like, it was like, oh my gosh, he knows this. Like, it's in there. Like, that was, I think, a real eye-opening for me, because it just seemed like he wasn't getting it. He wasn't understanding. Like, he just didn't know the alphabet and stuff. But watching him write, I'm like, oh my God, he was writing it full A, B, C, you know? And I was like,
he was getting it. I mean, so actually, that's such an interesting observation, right? That you thought he wasn't learning because of the state that his brain probably was in, right? And then but he was. And so when you were able to calm the gut, which then affected the brain, you think that's why he could just, yeah, mom, I do. I actually.
This is what I was going to say. Like, how powerful is this to see? We keep hearing about the gut-brain axis, which is newer information, new-ish compared to like what, 20, 30 years ago, even 10 years ago. Like, the gut-brain axis is real. Yeah. And if anything shows it, it's that. And I remember, like, when you were telling your story, the thought came when you were talking to the doctor and they were just like, okay, here's your prescription for therapy. I'm like, guarantee that doctor did not ask about diet, didn't ask about this, or even give you any suggestions. Even if he did ask, oh, is he eating? What is he eating? Like, the same thing has happened to my sister. She had a lot of gut issues. We go to the gastroenterologist. They're not even asking her about her gut.
No.
My mom had cancer. They don't tell her anything to avoid, introduce into her diet, or to what to avoid and what to do.
Isn't constipation a Miralax? I mean, yes. I have parents that wait months to get in with a pediatric GI because their kid's severely constipated. They might test them for a dairy allergy and then they just say, give them Miralax. What's the point? What are you there for? Like I'm not trying to be mean. I think gastroenterologists are very valuable, but dear gosh, like, can we get off the Miralax soapbox and actually do something else and understand that there's other ways to help kids? I mean, the newest thing that I get now is toddler diarrhea. And these kids are having chronic loose diarrhea stools every single day for years. They go to a gastroenterologist and they get told, oh, this is toddler diarrhea. They'll grow out of it. It's not a normal thing. They actually have a new ICD code for it now too and everything. And it's like, why? Like, this isn't normal. So obviously we're missing something. And to me, it's like, we're just failing in the medical system completely. Yes. We're failing children 100%.
They do. They make it normal. They normalize normal symptoms. And anytime you have a symptom, that is your body telling you, hey, something isn't right. Why are you doing that? That ain't normal.
That's right. And that's the thing we also want to point out in the conversations is that things we as moms were told were, quote, normal. We now are realizing we're maybe precursors to other things that we actually did need to pay attention to that were not normal. I'm just going to use a personal example. My son, my youngest, got a terrible rash after a well visit at like 18 months. I took him right back and said, what did he pick up at this doctor's office? Because remember how you used to take your kids in for their well visit and they'd get sick, right? Because you'd be like, oh, they were in the, you know, and I'd be like, what rash did he get? And it ended up being eczema, which I now know is a side effect of the vaccines that he was given at 18 months old. Not once did the doctor mention that, even though he had gotten a slew of shots that day. Not once, even though if I had asked for the insert to that, it would have said, eczema is a side effect of this. And in fact, I think 50 years ago, if you developed eczema after a vaccine, they would tell you to cease vaccination because it meant that your autoimmune system was not responding the way that you'd want it to. Okay, so here's the other thing. Remember when you would take your children to your well visits, they'd get their shots and they'd say, hey, if they run a high fever, right? If they're screaming uncontrollably, give them, and they would tell me alternate between Tylenol and Motrin, right? Like, just switch it up. Okay, I now know that a child screaming uncontrollably after vaccination is not normal. That actually is not normal, moms, okay? That's not normal. And I think that these are the things we want to start highlighting, that that's actually not a reaction or response that you want. And it's cause for you to look more deeply into maybe why that is happening. I have a diagnosed vaccine injured family member, and he screamed uncontrollably after every well visit. 4 days, ran high fevers, 4 days. And then suddenly, kind of what you described, Greer, we lost him. This normal, amazing kid. And his mom is a mama bear like you. And she started doing, now she didn't have your background. She started doing, I think, a lot of the things you're going to share today. And he is a completely different child today, Thank God. But we need this information out there so parents can make the decisions that are right for their families and their children. And so my next question to you, Greer, is, well, once you saw the improvement, the ABCs, okay, and you started with gut, then were there other things that you started to pursue? Because I know you're so far down the rabbit holes, you probably found more. What else did you find?
We cleared out like Lyme, some infections that we found as well. And he just continued to improve. Like every year we were gaining. I know we were still behind because, you know, at 4.5, he was just almost like being a 2-year-old again. So, you know, and starting all these things that he should have been doing years prior. So we definitely continued clearing out as much as we could. I mean, I detoxed this kid 6 ways to Sunday. I worked on his gut and we started working on his diet, but it was just so, where he was age-wise, the control and the ARFID. I mean, I had had him in intensive feeding therapy and we just couldn't gain where we were. So I kind of pivoted and I started doing some other things where, you know, we actually were in the Duke University stem cell treatment study for autism called the MPACT study. And that was a couple years ago. We're still waiting to get the results from that study. And I've been anxious ever since, not wanting. So it was 2 infusions. One time he got stem cells, one time he got a placebo. And we did actually see really great gains. I mean, he jumped a few grade levels in reading when we did the stem cells, which was amazing. And that was a really great experience to go through that process and see how the diagnostic testing and things were going. We have done things like brain balance with Dr. Melillo and saw great improvements there as well, unlocking different parts of his brain. We have done TruDose, which is PRP platelet therapy. It's more of a newer way of doing almost like a pivot of stem cells. It's very similar. You're just using your own platelets. And we've done that a few times with really great improvements as well. We've done exosome therapies with my friend, Dr. Jay Goodbinder, so I feel like we've gone and done a lot of different things over the years. And I always say for me, it was always when my mom gut was telling me that something was right to do. So, you know, it wasn't just things that I did on whims, like, oh, I need to do this right now. It would be like something like for Duke, it dropped in my lap, like out of the blue. I just happened to see it in a Facebook group. I applied and it was just, it was like the moon's aligned with those things. And then, you know, with Melillo, like I was talking to a patient who had just gone and came back and they saw great improvements. I looked him up. I found out he was 30 minutes away from me. And I was like, oh, okay. So it was always these things that happened that were like, you know, right time, right situation, you know, right everything. So, you know, I always just, you know, when I met Dr. Jay Goodbinder for the exosome therapy, we were at a conference and we were chatting and talking and he was like, you know, you should come out to my clinic. I'd love to do exosome hyperbaric chamber and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, like it was just, you know, it was just, how did we meet at that one conference that I was speaking on? And he happened to be there and talking and he was just intrigued with my story, with my son. And we just had a great connection. It was just like, I always just think that sometimes these parents are always going to be in these right time, right situation kind of thing.
I have a question. Sorry, Holly. I wanted to ask a question just before we move on to something else. When you say detox, you know, we throw this word around a lot. And not that you're throwing it around, but I think that people are like, what would you do to detox? Like, what do you mean detox? Like, are we talking parasite detox? Are you talking about elimination diet detox? Are you talking about heavy metal detox? Like, I think a lot of people are like, what does that mean? You know, because a lot of this is, y'all, everything that we're talking about is a toxin. Okay. If it's a heavy metal, if it's a medicine, if it's a food, if it's something like, if it's an environmental like allergy, whatever it is, it's toxins. And they talk about like the toxin bucket, the toxin overload. And it's so important. You just got to keep draining the toxins out, getting those out. Can you, if you could briefly like go on to, you know, tell us a little bit about that. I think people would love to hear.
So you're 100% right. So every toxin is slightly different. So heavy metals, mold, environmental toxins, they all are different chemical compounds and makeup. So their detoxes are actually all quite different. You know, certain molds detox better with certain binders with, you know, some do well with bentonite clay and activated charcoal versus, you know, or certain probiotics. We kind of did the round robin. So like first we would hit heavy metals, with certain, and it depends on what the heavy metal is too. Believe it or not, certain heavy metals bind and get removed from certain things, like silica only, you know, only binds to a few different heavy metals versus all of them, like a zeolite, you know. So this is why we test and we don't guess, because it helps us hone in on our protocols for children. So we're able to identify, and we've done, you know, with Keegan, we've done several different types of detoxes with heavy metals, you know, some mold, environmental toxins, et cetera. And it really does depend on, you know, using binders, zeolates, you know, antioxidants, bioflavonoids, things like that to work with his system too. It also depends on his detoxification system as well. And that's why I work on the gut first and help the body actually balance out so we can actually remove the toxins a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Makes total sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's too, like, again, we want to point people to go find Greer on Instagram, because for us to cover every single thing that she knows and has done and can maybe give you advice and encouragement in as well, you know, you'll need to go watch everything and go see. Because as you said, it is very personal for each individual child. But I think what maybe the biggest message we can send to all of you parents is, number one, whatever is going on in your child, there is so much that can likely be done to help them begin to heal. And we know it's overwhelming. There's so much information out there. But it sounds like, Greer, you really have a more of a methodical kind of a step-by-step approach, like to start maybe identifying and eliminating different things so that that child can gradually get well. And I will say, to the stem cell thing, my family member went to Mexico to have that done. It's very expensive. Thankfully, they did have the financial means to do that. Game changer. Absolute yeah. Game changer. This child walked up to me for the first time. And I think, you know, he's like 11 or 12. And he walked up to me for the first time this year and just called me by name and said hello to me. And yeah. That was... You guys, when I can tell you where he's come from to where he is now, it's like, it's so encouraging to know that there are things out there, but unfortunately not found in the mainstream world yet. We're hoping that's going to change, right?
And that's like, you know, with TruDose is very similar and a lot more affordable.
Okay.
Versus stem cells. It is in the United States. I'm actually releasing a new free ebook today called Beyond the Basics, which goes into depth detail about like our journey of what different things that we've done, different things, and including TruDose and specific areas that actually have this available in certain states for pediatrics, and how it's very similar to stem cell treatment. So obviously, you know, it comes with a very hefty price tag to go to Panama, Tijuana for the stem cell treatments. And not everyone can afford that. So TruDose would be a nice alternate approach to seeing. And so my new free ebook, which launches today, will be able to help guide parents into everything, a lot of things beyond just the foundation approaches to, you know, working with kids with autism and ADHD.
Well, I think also just like if we can just take what you're doing and listen to everybody's story too, but just instead of harping on like division and like no arguing over no this causes it, no this causes it, no this causes it, there's multiple causes, just like cancer. We have no idea. It could be anything. It's like, but what the most important thing is, what do we do from here? Like once you find your cause. Everybody is different. And we should all want to know what causes what, whether it's diabetes, cancer, heart disease, anything, autism, like Crohn's. Like if you could prevent it, why not? If you could reduce the symptoms, or if you could help somebody get better, we're not talking about necessarily a miracle cure or anything. Why not? Like, why can we not all be unified in this and move forward with what we know? Like, when you know better, you do better. And then you go a step further and you share it with everybody, which is what you're doing, Greer. And this is like what we're doing. You know, of course, our podcast is called Just Think, but then it's like, but then you need to act. Then you need to have courage and be bold and share. Because, and I remember one of your posts, Greer, saying, you know, this is why I do what I do. And you show like you started this, even if you could just help one other person. And now look at how many people you're helping, You know, this is why it is so important. This is why we wanted you on here to share your story, to give people hope, and to give people information that sadly they're not getting from their doctors. Because the doctors, I mean, and I'm not, look, y'all know we love doctors. We have a lot of doctor friends. We have a lot of friends in the healthcare profession. I'm a nurse. I was in the ER for 17 years. Like I know I'm a medical professional too. I get it. And I have wonderful doctor friends. But so many are just stuck in one mindset, or they're not going the extra mile, or not opening their eyes and ears and listening to the parents. The first thing they tell us in nursing school is listen to the mom. Listen to the mom. The mom knows best, truly. Now, I know there's some crazy mamas, okay? But there are your mom, you know, and what is that? There's like that quote, a worried mom does more research than the FBI. I truly believe it. When you have a son that's going through this, when I had gut health issues growing up, I know so much about the gut because I had those issues. When you are thrown into the situation, those are the people you probably want to listen to. Not the people who just read something or learned something in a book one day and that they're not listening to you, because everybody's different.
Yeah.
And we went, Keegan was about 3 and a half or so. It was probably right after his baby brother was born. And we went to a geneticist. So we had waited 6 months to get the developmental pediatrician appointment. And, you know, I was about 7 weeks pregnant when we went to the appointment. And I remember her saying, here's a script to go to a geneticist to rule out that this could be a genetic abnormality so you don't pass this on to your next child. And I was like, well, I'm pregnant now. And just like fear came over my face. I think I waited a year because I couldn't. Like I just, in my head, I just couldn't do it. And we went to a geneticist. He must have had he was only about 3 and a half and he had 20 vials of blood drawn. It was just like, I was like petrified because he started running down the hall and I was like, oh my gosh, you're going to pass out. Don't run. And they called me and they said his tests all came back negative. There wasn't anything that we found. You can just follow up with your regular pediatrician. And I was like, I'm confused now because I've always, you know, if autism's genetic, why? And they were like, oh, well, we don't know about all the autism genes. And I'm like, but I was like, I don't have autism in my family. I said, this is what really started catapulting me. And the more I realized, it was like the differences between genetics and epigenetics. So there's a genetic component to autism. Yes, we have identified about 100 different genes that can significantly correlate with an autism diagnosis. But then there's the epigenetics part where your genetics and how you detox, metabolize, and, you know, your system is with our environment can then cause epigenetic downward spiral. And then when, you know, his baby brother had the tongue ties and I learned about MTHFR and then like the methylation cycle, I was like, oh, this is making so much more sense now. And I'm able to put all these puzzle pieces together. So when people scream, it's genetic. It's like, okay, are we talking about genetics or are we talking about epigenetics? Because those are two entirely different things. Something could be straight genetic. You know, I have autism and I pass it on to my kid. That is a genetic trait. But if it's epigenetic, my husband and I don't have autism. I have nobody in our family that has autism, but my son's genetic makeup is very different between me, my husband, and my youngest son. So that was one of the first things I started to understand and realizing that his genetic makeup was very different and his epigenetics is what was impacting with environmental toxic load. And that was just things I didn't know.
Okay. So I want to empower parents again with what you just said. MTHFR is a common one. You're probably going to see and hear more because so many people carry some form of that. It's a genetic mutation, right, Greer? And so some of us carry it, some of us don't, some of us have multiple components of it. Anyway, I have it. And when I was pregnant, the signs that I had was when I was pregnant and put on a, you know, your multivitamin, your multivitamin that is so high in folic acid, my body rejected that vitamin. And my doctors were kind of mystified. Like, why can't I take this? I'm having massive muscle spasms every time I take it, back spasms, things. I was young. I didn't, good shape. I shouldn't have been having that. Then I'd stop taking it. They'd go away. Well, now, no, folic acid, I don't methylate it, you know, and that is also in every bread and pasta in America. And so when I took that out of my diet, I felt amazing as well, right? And so there's so much that we don't know about this component that I think we can make great strides in, because if you know your child has one of those genetic mutations, it may alter the way that they eat. It may alter the way they have their well visits. It may alter vaccine schedules, whatever, right? And again, It's the information that the average parent needs to make an informed decision for their kids. But we want many of you to know, because those of us who've been researching this for years, I think we can talk above people's heads sometimes, and they don't really, it's just they're trying to consume so much information and it's overwhelming. But just to say exactly what you said, Greer, some of us are going to have a propensity genetically, maybe, to have a response to something that is different from the next person, which is why making the quote cause of autism such a confusing conversation, because we don't know that there's not multiple triggers to that. I think what we can probably all agree on is I don't know 60-year-olds or more with lots of autism in their demographic, which leads us to believe an environmental cause has to be identified. I think most of us can.
And I really can we somehow petition for them to start doing like mandatory, like maybe not mandatory, I hate mandatory, but putting the option out there. They're like MTHFR. Like why, you know, you do these genetic tests, like when you're pregnant, you know, or they offer certain things. Why is that not one of them? When like 40% or somewhere around there of women. The population has the genetic mutation or a partial.
And well, it makes that much difference. The problem is though, here's the issue. Methylation cycle isn't just on MTHFR alone. There's other genetic SNPs that are in there. So it makes it hard because we can't put all of our eggs in one basket and just put, if you have MTHFR, because with epigenetics, the downfall is we're still learning about epigenetics and how everything plays a role. And we also are understanding that we have backup SNPs, meaning that even if you have MTHFR, does not mean that you are not methylating, that you are not detoxing, because your homocysteine levels could be normal and stuff. And you could have a backup SNP that has actually been like, oh, that one's having trouble. We're going to come over and help out. Do I think, though, we need overall screening in general for children? 100%. You know, kid, you know, if you look and you understand that now the CDC says that over 40% of children, over 40% of American children now have at least one chronic health condition. That's crazy to me.
Crazy.
Like, you know,
crazy.
And that's just seen as, no big deal. That's normal.
Normal.
It's like, well, you know, it's not normal to have a chronic health condition if you're a child. You know, 40% is, and I think that's grossly underestimated, to be completely honest. I think it's probably more than 50. But we are not helping our, you know, I think this is like the first time in decades the future generation's life expectancy has now declined.
That's right. That's right.
So we have a big problem. I'm trying to advocate for kids, especially with autism, to have the screening covered by insurance, because if we know 80% of kids on the spectrum have gut health issues, metabolic dysbiosis, mitochondrial dysfunction, we know this from biomedical, you know, biochemical standpoint and research. If we know this, then why are we not having saying, okay, if you have a kid with autism, this needs to be tested. We're just like, oh, this is just normal. And, you know, this is just how autism is. And then they move on. And it's like, okay, well, wait, we've missed, you know, if we have this research and information, this is what I was hoping that, you know, research and information is going to get out to the people who are working with our children to make, you know, these pushes, but they're not. And that's a very big issue for me is like, you know, you're supposed to be the face, the practitioners, the support system, and you're not even fighting for our kids. So if you're not fighting for our kids, who's actually fighting for our kids?
Moms.
We are.
Yeah. Moms.
The mamas. I mean, truly.
It's the truth. That's the truth.
Some dads too, but it's the mama bear.
The silver lining of like this whole conversation and just everything that's going on in the world today is that I think there's probably going to be a very small percentage of moms that are going to go into a doctor's office and let a doctor say, oh, it's just autism. So bye. Like, that's not going to cut it anymore. I think that we've like, there's been a tipping point now to where we're not just going to accept that and just say, well, labs are normal. And yeah, I'm not sure why he stopped talking and why he's screaming all day and why he's not eating food and why he's not pooping. But just here's some therapies and we'll see in 6 months. I mean, I think that that's not going to be able to cut it anymore.
It's more in your face now. So when Kian was diagnosed when he was 2, I mean, Facebook groups were just kind of starting out. Like there wasn't a lot of like internet research and stuff. And then over the years, it has just exploded. Yes. So I think now it's more in your face. And part of it too, I do want to just point out, because I know we're, you know, going to wrap up soon. I want parents to understand to be careful with the information and the people who are saying the information online. We do have a lot of parents now making bold claims and statements to sell cures and fixes and stuff like this. And this is what's watering down our biomedical community and preventing parents from actually seeking help from actual professionals. Not everyone online is a professional. Not every person has a good heart. And I found that, you know, with a lot of my families the hard way. They've spent thousands working with someone who they thought was a medical professional. It turns out they were just a mom selling, you know, false things. And I want parents to feel empowered 100% and educate, but you have to be careful with the person and where you're getting the information from, because we can be successful in this community. And this biomedical community is amazing. It's filled with a bunch of practitioners who have, we have all worked really hard. We have published research. We are trying to make a stance here with the information and research and be credible. And unfortunately, we have people in this area that are just using it as a money grab. And that's really disheartening for me, because we want this to be successful. We want every parent to have success with their child. And you know, I want parents to feel empowered and learn information. Just they have to be careful where the information is coming.
That's a really good word. And to be honest, if you think about it, Greer, because you're right, that's 100% happening. But I think also, I think about how many times in even the medical system, I was given multiple opinions from multiple doctors and they would argue about each other's opinions.
Yeah.
And they thought their way was the best way for me. And ultimately what ended up happening in my chronic condition was I figured it out on my own by assimilating that information. And then, you know, starting to like kind of how you do with your son, applying different things to see. And listen, parents, we know it's hard. And I think at the end of the day, there's not going to be one voice that's probably going to help you figure everything out. But I think if you can take the approach that Greer's talking about, and really what you practice, Greer, which is kind of work your way backwards. Where are we at? Okay, let's work back to where we think.
Using the labs is what helps dramatically for these children. You know, we need the data. If someone's not going to be able to run labs and interpret them properly, like, listen, that, you know, there are great doctors, there are bad doctors, but that's why a lot of us in the biomedical, we go to MAPS. We go to the autism conferences, Documenting Hope, et cetera. We are constantly communicating with one another. We are constantly learning and educating off of one another. We do have a standard way of working with these children. So we want everyone to be successful. And, you know, parent, and I say, use your mom gut 100%, you know, follow your mom gut. I just want people to also just be careful, because not everyone has the same education and background, and they might say, oh yeah, I work with kids, and then but they also do hormones and adults, and it's like, you know, you're not an autism specialist if you're doing multiple different things. Like, I only work with kids with autism and ADHD. Like, I that's all I do. So
I think that's a really good point to say, at least make your very first criteria when you're looking for someone who can read and interpret labs. I mean, if you start there, that's going to weed out, you know, a lot of people. And those people may have some good advice on things that have worked. But I think that, you know, labs are clearly important in this case, because like you said, when you went, your doctor ran the run-of-the-mill labs, they were normal. But when you actually got more intensive labs, you saw a lot of things that you could work on. So you need to find somebody who can do that, read that, interpret that, and then kind of that could be like a good jumping off point.
Our listeners know that the three of us are passionate about exposing the broken systems within our society, revealing how the quest for money and power has corrupted so many of them so that they no longer serve us.
That's right. We talk a lot about our broken medical system, and that includes our broken medical insurance system. We believe that it is time we dismantle the broken systems and work together to rebuild new ones that actually serve us.
And that's why we are excited to share an answer we found as an alternative to your traditional insurance plan that charges you exorbitant monthly payments and deductibles, then asks you to pay even more when you get sick, that controls your medical decisions, including what your physician is allowed to do and prescribe, and that rakes in billions as corporations at our expense.
That's why we love CrowdHealth. We interviewed CEO Andy Schoonover in episode 106, which we encourage you all to check out to learn more. But Andy founded Crowd Health after experiencing firsthand just how inept and outrageous insurance companies have become.
Crowd Health is not an insurance company, but a platform and a community that empowers you with a crowdfunding tool and a wealth of resources to efficiently manage your healthcare costs. And it's an excellent alternative to health insurance, allowing us to escape the healthcare matrix and put us and our healthcare providers back in charge.
Ever since my family and I made the switch to Crowd Health, not only are we proud to be part of a company with integrity, but we love that we are free from the broken insurance system. We will never be part of that system again. We've had nothing but an A-plus experience. From before we even enrolled, we connected with an advocate who answered our questions. Then upon enrollment, we were immediately assigned a personal advocate who is literally a text away anytime I need her. If you follow them on Instagram and Twitter, you will see not only how much they truly care about each of the members, but also how much money they save us. This is why we encourage all of you to go to joincrowdhealth.org to learn more and to use code JUSTTHINK to get your first 3 months of membership for just $99 a month. Again, it's joincrowdhealth.org with discount code JUSTTHINK. You can also reference our Just Think the podcast Substack for more information.
Yeah. And let me also, as we start to wrap up, I do want to address some of the more controversial parts because it's been in the news. And I know you addressed it on your Instagram. Because when we are talking about things like autism and ADHD, there can be multiple things that are contributing to afflicting each child, and it varies by child. But when the whole Tylenol thing came out, what we see, and I think too, because our country's so politicized, that then people want to jump on the side that their guy or their girl or whatever is quoting, rather than just saying, hey, maybe we have some new information that we didn't have before that we now need to take a look at. And I'll use baby powder. You guys remember Johnson & Johnson's baby powder? Remember when that was safe? Remember? You guys know, right? They're paying out billions of dollars, right? Because of cancer from that. And so, again, we thought it was safe. We now know there were, for some people, it was not. And now there are payouts. So again, I think we have to just take a step back and go, sometimes when we know better, we can do better. And we're kind of in that moment where information is coming because it has to, because we're so sick, we have to figure this out. And now that there's arguments around it, I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about the whole Tylenol autism connection, Greer, because you did a great job of sharing that.
Yeah. So believe it or not, if you kind of Google, and I've seen a couple people post about this too, from 2012 and on, Tylenol has been in the news several times. Probably over 5 or 6, 7, 8 times that it, since 2012, research studies had come out and shown that there could be a possibility, correlation, ADHD and other health concerns and stuff. This isn't new, you know, which is kind of funny. It's in the news now and it is being more politicized, but back then in 2012 and when it was in the news and the research was coming out, there was other European studies that the news reported on and stuff. So it's very interesting that if you actually go back and actually see what was in the news, we've known about this. This isn't anything new. This is the part of politics that I really hate.
Same.
It's more of who's saying it and setting the stage. I don't like how it was presented and how it was said. I will be very clear on that, but it doesn't negate that there could be a strong connection or possible connections in several different areas. So I think, my doctor always said, like, try not to take medication while you're pregnant. We really should avoid any type of medication while pregnant, because we don't have information on neurodevelopment and things like that. So the best we have is observational studies. And sometimes those observational studies aren't very longitudinal studies either. So I would just say typically with this isn't new. This has been in the news. You can definitely look it up and research it and see it from 2012, probably even further and later, but it has been in the news. This isn't new information, just heed with caution. It's, if you can avoid it, avoid it. There's other alternatives during that time, but we understand that everything, there's a time and place for modern medicine too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
Greer, we know you got your free ebook coming out today and this podcast episode will be out shortly after, but just tell people how they can find you.
Yeah, sure. So everything is Biomedical Healing for Kids. That's my website, my Instagram, and I have a private Facebook group and a public Facebook group, or public Facebook page, I should say. So yeah, it's Biomedical Healing for Kids, and you can find me anywhere and send me a DM, chat, email.
Awesome.
All right.
Well, we know there's a lot of parents, sadly, Greer, that do need your help, and they do need this information, and we want to give them hope today. We hope we've, you know, piqued your curiosity to explore this more. And parents, also just to remember, you're your child's best advocate in all the things. And what we hope to do as a podcast is to give you bits of information, point you to various experts, because we're not, but Greer knows way more about this than we do. Point you to the people who do know, so that you can go get the questions you have answered, you can get the information you need and feel empowered to help your kids and your families live their best, healthiest lives. So Greer, thanks so much for being with us. We love this conversation. We appreciate what you're doing.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Next time, everybody.